I'm Amanda McNulty with Clemson Extension and Making It Grow, and this is one of our podcasts where we try to bring you more detailed information on our topic. And I'm speaking today with David Coyle, who's a professor, assistant professor, he's very modest, in the Department of Forestry and Environmental Conservation. And David, you have some specific areas that you focus on, and please tell us what those are.
Hey, Amanda. Yeah, I focus on forest health and invasive species. So a lot of the invasive plants, I deal with those. And from a forest health perspective, it's everything from insects to fungi, whether that impacts a tree in someone's yard or in someone's, you know, 1,000-acre stand. I work with kind of all manners of tree-eating pests.
My husband's family, until recently, had a large property that was planted in pines. And every now and then we would get a check. It was thrilling. And I think that's happened in South Carolina. People have used their pine stands to send children to college and to put a new roof on the house. And just it's just been a major economic part of our lives. And I think that forestry is important to the overall economy of the state. It's a major player. Is it perhaps the largest?
It's one of the largest. Yeah, the last economic assessment done by the South Carolina Forestry Commission, $21.2 billion of economic impact a year. And that's in product outputs, that's in labor, that's in wages. It's a major factor in South Carolina's economy, that's for sure.
And tell me, is our managed forest mostly pine, or are they combination? How does it work out?
Yeah, the forests of South Carolina, if you look at the state as a whole, we're pretty evenly split. About half of our trees are hardwoods, about half of them are pine. Most of the trees that go towards production are going to be pine, though, and most of those are going to be planted pine or plantation pine. These are what we affectionately call pines in lines as you're driving down the road. That's what most of the productivity comes from here in South Carolina. Of those trees, a great, you know, most of that stuff is going to be loblolly pine. That's probably the most common tree we have here. Longleaf pine is planted quite a bit as well, and that's becoming more common to plant that in lines. And when you get down closer to the coast, you might find slash pine a little bit. That can handle a little wetter feet, sandy soils, so you'll see that one planted for production purposes as well. But those are the main three production pines we have. As you get more towards the upstate, up you know, approaching the Appalachians, there's a little bit of shortleaf pine and pitch pine and little Table Mountain pine, Virginia pine. Those aren't really big commercial species, but there's some of the pines we have.
But loblolly is the predominant one that we think of as the moneymaker overall.
That's correct. Yep, that's correct. It's the most common pine in the southeastern U.S. It's the moneymaker for a lot of different states down here.
What is it used for mostly when it's harvested?
Yeah, a lot of loblolly gets used for pulp, and pulp is turned into everything from paper to baby and adult diapers. It's used for a lot of different things. So pulp is one of our number one things we make in the state and in the region as a whole. If you look at the southeastern U.S. on a whole, it would be one of the top, I think, 10 countries as far as pulp production, if it was its own country. So we have a lot of pulp.
Really?
Mills. We have a lot of pulp production in this part of the world, which is, you know, kind of odd that there's this toilet paper shortage now. Well, we have all this pulp all around us that is used to defies logic a little bit. But that's, you know, one of the biggest things we make here is pulp. Probably the second biggest thing we make is lumber. You know,
okay.
2x4s, 4x6 lumber you would go and buy at a lumber yard. That all comes from trees we grow here as well. So we've got a number of different things. Beyond that, they make things like chipboard and particle board, fence posts, railroad ties, all sorts of different things.
And it really is, people sometimes get upset when they see trees being harvested, but I think we need to remember that trees are a crop. Isn't that correct?
They are, you know, especially in this part of the world, especially in South Carolina, we grow our trees as a renewable resource, okay? I like to think it's equivalent to corn in the Midwest. We have very you know, we know what we're doing. We plant it in rows. It's very mechanized. We're doing improved selections. We're putting good stuff in there. We know how to harvest it. We know how to grow it. And it's not like we're just cutting all these trees down and leaving that land to do nothing. You know, those trees are cut down. That land is prepped and it's replanted again.
Like, yes.
Probably the next year. I think there's a lot of maybe misinformation about deforestation, right? What we do here is not deforestation. It is harvesting a crop so that we can put another crop in afterwards. So there's a big difference there in my opinion. And
so we shouldn't be distressed if we're taking a rod and see that trees are being cut. Predominantly that's going to be done in a sustainable manner. People want their land to be productive. They want their land to be used for the best possible purposes. And that's being done for a reason and for the health of the trees too, because there's a point at which they are mature and that's the time to take them out and bring in and replant.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, and if something of more value could be grown on that land, it probably would be. So trees can grow on land that maybe isn't good for other crops, right? So we're getting a good value from that land. And, you know, when I drive by and I see a clear cut happening, I just think, hey, this just means a whole bunch of trees are going to be planted next.
Yeah, it's exciting.
We're just taking these things away. This is an opportunity to plant a whole other crop of trees. So it's a good thing, I think.
There are some problems that come periodically, insect problems that just get everybody terribly distressed. And one insect in particular, you said, is really detrimental and can be devastating. So what's the worst insect that we have that comes and gets into our pines?
The southern pine beetle is the number one insect problem of pines in the eastern U.S. It's a native beetle. It's a tiny little thing, maybe about not even a quarter inch long. It's about an eighth of an inch long. Little
really? Tiny?
Black thing, yeah. It's smaller than a grain of rice. Well, it's half the size of a grain of rice, if that helps for perspective. But this is our number one pine pest, again, in the eastern U.S. The beetles are always out there. They're sort of surviving. But when conditions are right, their populations can grow and grow and grow, and they can attack and take down healthy pine trees. So what we try to tell our landowners and land managers is you've got to keep your stands resistant to southern pine beetle, because once an outbreak happens, it's tough to control. It can be done, but it's difficult. So keeping those stands resistant is the most important thing.
What's the mechanism by which that beetle harms the tree? What does it do to the tree?
So that beetle, when they find a susceptible tree, they're going to chew their way in there and they're going to feed on the green part of the tree, the cambium layer, the phloem. Yes. The adults are going in. They're making a little, we call it a gallery. Think of it as a little tunnel. So they drill through there and make a tunnel. And then the female lays her eggs on either side of that tunnel and those eggs hatch. And the little larvae, the baby beetles, start feeding on that green phloem.
Oh.
This is what the tree uses to, you know, move nutrients throughout it. When that phloem is taken away, the tree can't move nutrients. And when the tree can't move nutrients, it starves and dies.
Okay.
So that's how these beetles kill trees. Once a female gets inside a tree successfully, she gives out a pheromone. And that's just this airborne chemical that only beetles can smell. And she essentially puts out this chemical that calls all southern pine beetles and says, hey, it's successful, this tree's good to eat. And all the other beetles will come to that tree. And if enough of them get going and get in that tree, that's how an outbreak starts. Then every other one that gets in puts out a pheromone, and then more get in and put out more pheromones. And pretty soon, all the trees around there are getting attacked, and there's pheromone everywhere, and you've got a beetle outbreak.
Are there some environmental conditions that make it more likely that you might have an attack?
Yes, when a tree, so with southern pine, mostly loblolly, we always talk about basal area. And basal area is if you cut all the trees off at your chest height, 4.5 feet tall, the area of those stems over the area of the land is what are called basal areas. So if you think of a tree that's about 14 inches in diameter, that's about the size of a dinner plate if you were to cut that thing off right there. That's about 1 square foot of basal area. So when our forest stands have 120 square feet per acre, so 120 pie plates in an acre.
Yes.
At that point, we call that stand susceptible to southern pine beetle.
Oh.
That stand is thick enough to where southern pine beetles have a good chance of getting in there and making it susceptible. Below 80 square feet per acre is generally not susceptible. And when you're in that 80 to 120 range, you're getting there, but you've got some time still. So if a stand is thick and stressed, it is more susceptible to southern pine beetles. So what is the solution is not letting your stand get to that point, right? So when your stand gets to where it's that thick, it's time to thin it. You know, when it gets to 120, it's time to thin that thing down. And this is a great opportunity to make some money off your pines. You can thin it, and a lot of that thin wood will go towards the pulp market, right? And so you'll get a paycheck there.
So partially, if the stand is real thick, then there's not good air movement, and the pheromone kind of remains captured in there and is a big signal to draw in other beetles.
Yes, and that's one of the reasons. So when trees are thick, there's two things that make them more susceptible to southern pine beetle. When trees are thick, all those trees are competing with each other for the water and the nutrients in the land.
Oh, okay.
So if every tree there only has access to a little bit of the water and nutrients, every tree is going to be a little bit weak to some extent. So by taking some of those trees out, thinning it down, all the remaining trees are going to be stronger. Like they're going to have more water. They're going to have more nutrients. They can produce more resin, which can help fight off some of those initial attacks. But also, like you mentioned, the physical aspect, if you've got a thick, dense stand, if you go stand in a forest that has lots and lots of trees where it's dark on the bottom, sunlight's not getting in there, there's usually no air movement. It just sits and it's kind of stale. If you go stand in a forest where you can see some sunlight coming through and you can see through, you know, the stems, there's usually a little gentle breeze. This type of breeze will carry away that pheromone and make it much more difficult for other beetles to find it. So it's sort of like washing away that signal that says it's a susceptible tree. So there's those two reasons that we try to get people to thin their stands when it's necessary, you know. And we've had some issues where someone says, I don't want to thin right now because I want the pulp price to go up. I understand that, we understand that, but at the same time, from a biological perspective, your stand is ready to be thinned.
So you're gambling a little bit if you don't go in and thin when you should, hoping to see an increase in the pulp price. But if you get a big infestation, then you really are in serious trouble.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is, man. It's a gamble, right? I'm not going to tell you how to run your land, but I'm telling you, if you get your stand that's too thick, you're at a risk for southern pine beetle. Maybe it won't happen. Maybe the pulp price will go up and maybe everything will work out great for that landowner. But what if there's a southern pine beetle outbreak and you end up losing 30, 40, 50% of your stand to southern pine beetles? Dead timber is not worth as much as live timber. You know, that's a fact. So you're definitely taking a risk there if you try to push off those things.
So drought would mean that the trees are having to compete more for water. And are pine trees affected at all by heat as we see rising temperatures? Is that going to be a factor that affects the health of our pine trees, or do they stop growing as and being as healthy when it's extremely hot, particularly at night in times like that?
Yeah, the whole, you know, water, it's all about water relations for pines and for trees in general. So if you've got much warmer temperatures, that means any water that has fallen, especially in those sandy soils, we got a lot of sandy soils in South Carolina, that's going to dry out really quick. And, you know, I've been in some of these dry soils where you can go in there 2 hours after a rain and you would hardly know it rained because it's just dry sand on top of the soil. So as it gets warmer, the water is not going to hang around as much, especially in those top soil layers. As it stays warmer overnight, you know, normally during nighttime is when a tree sort of replenishes all its internal water stores.
Yes. So
it's losing water during the day. The sun is out, the wind, the breeze is blowing. It's losing water through its through its needles, through its leaves. At nighttime, it's kind of when it sort of rejuices itself. But as nights stay warmer, it's more difficult for trees to do that because, again, if it's warmer, there's less water out there, unless it's going to be raining every single day, which it doesn't seem to do either. So, you know, the heat doesn't affect the trees as much as what the heat does to the amount of water available.
I see.
Where our big issue is.
Okay. If someone gets an outbreak of southern pine beetle, what do they do?
Well, if you have an outbreak of southern pine beetle, the first thing you should do is get a hold of your local South Carolina Forestry Commission forester, because they're going to need to know that we have a southern pine beetle spot, an active one in the state. So that's the first thing we ask people to do.
So they need to know that.
Yeah, the commission keeps track of all the southern pine beetle stuff. So it's very important to get with the commission, get with your local forestry natural resources agent, get with me. We need to let our agency know that, hey, we've got southern pine beetle active here, because then they need to be looking for it in areas that might be near to that land, right?
Wow.
Maybe you notice it's your land, but what if there's a state forest next to that?
Yes. Uh-huh.
We need to know where to look, and sometimes this is a good way for us to figure out where to start. As far as managing that land in a forest, what we do is we cut around the spot. That's what we tell folks, is cut around the southern pine beetle spot. So a southern pine beetle spot will start in usually one tree, and usually it radiates out like a big growing donut.
Okay. Uh-huh.
So, you know, the beetles affect trees constantly on the edge. So when you go to that spot, you look to see where is the edge of the beetle activity. So
yes.
Pitch tubes, little globs of sap coming out there, and you can see where the beetles are, and you can sort of usually draw a line. Well, here's as far as they've gotten. What we want to do management-wise is cut a buffer all around that spot. So we want to figure out where's the edge. We generally tell people, figure out how tall is the tree on the edge. So if you've got a 50-foot tall tree on the edge of your spot, we want to cut a buffer that's 1.5 times that height. So we would, 1.5 times 50 is 75. We want to cut a 75-foot buffer into those green, healthy trees all the way around the spot. And then what that's going to do is, we talked earlier, if there's less trees, you get more breeze, it blows away that pheromone. That's what that buffer will do. It creates this great big wide gap that wind and air is going to move in. And it's pretty rare that the beetles will jump the gap, as we call it. So that's a good way to just kind of hold them there. Yes, probably everything inside there is going to be killed,
yes,
but it's not going to spread to the rest of your stand.
So it serves almost like a fire break does. There's
material. Exactly. Yeah, you want to stop the bleeding is one of the terms you like to use, right?
You have to remove the trees that have the beetles in them. I mean, that would be even more money that you're spending. I'm just trying to figure out the whole scenario.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes if you can get a crew in there, a logging crew in there soon enough afterwards, they can salvage those trees and you can get some value out of them, or at least you can get them removed without having to pay for it, right?
Oh.
And a lot of times you can bundle that with the green stuff they're going to be taking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here's this many acres of my green buffer trees, and then here's also this many acres of recently killed trees. If the trees haven't started breaking down from fungi yet, and they're still, you know, solid wood, they're just dead, they can get some value out of those. So it's very situation dependent. It's going to depend on what the mills around that land are taking, how soon you can get a crew in there, all of those things. It's a very case-by-case basis.
When you're walking in your pines, what you talked about, little globules of resin and all, what does it look like, and where on the tree would you see it? I mean, is it way up tall in the tree, or is, I'm real short, I don't know if I'd even see it.
Well, they'll be all over the tree, so you'll see some of them. Yeah, it just looks like a little glob of sap. It's usually white or yellow in color.
And yes.
It, you know, in southern pine beetles, it usually comes in the between the bark, like in the cracks of the bark. You know how they've got.
Yes.
Southern pine beetle often drills right between those plates, so you'll have kind of a row going right down the bark cracks.
Oh, so you can see it.
Pine beetle. Mm-hmm. There's other beetles that will attack trees, and they will sometimes drill right on the flat part on the plate, and that's the Ips bark beetle.
Oh, okay.
There's a pine bark beetle we have in South Carolina. We've got several different species, but these are less aggressive than southern pine beetle. They will attack any tree that's just weak. So they might attack a tree that the southern pine beetle's in, because obviously that tree's weakened at this point, right? They also make similar looking pitch tubes. Ips bark beetles are most common when there's something big like a drought. When if it's a drought, kind of all the trees are going to be a little bit stressed. A tree that was struck by lightning, or maybe a tree that was injured by equipment hitting the bottom of it, something like that. Ips are not aggressive like southern pine beetle, but they are out there, and in some cases they can do a lot of damage themselves.
So depending on where you see those little globules is a indicator of which beetle is being active in your tree.
Right. Yep. On the plates or in the cracks is kind of tell people. Those are your two big ones. And the Ips and southern pine beetle pitch tubes are usually about the size of a dime or maybe a nickel. Mm-hmm. So they're fairly small. There's one other beetle called the turpentine beetle, black turpentine beetle. This is more closely related to the southern pine beetle, but it's much larger and the pitch tubes are much, much bigger. They're, you know, a quarter to a half dollar size in diameter, and they might stick out from the tree an inch and a half. They're very large. And these are, they're bigger beetles, and you'll generally see them on the bottom 10 feet or so of the tree. So that's another pretty weak one. It's not very aggressive. We tend to see those maybe after a prescribed fire got too hot, or again, in drought, you'll see turpentine beetles. But, you know, the things we mainly tell people is southern pine beetles are most aggressive species, especially in natural stands. Management can help keep that at bay. Ips and turpentine beetles, they're coming to trees that are stressed, whether it's a natural stressor like a drought, or whether it's a stressor that's man-made, you know, a lot of injuries from the first thinning, you know, people scraping the bottom of the tree, something like that can cause those damages as well.
You said that many of our neighborhoods were built in places where pines were, and so an important tree in our landscape, our home residential landscapes, can be pine trees. And I mean, gosh, you know, they do give shade, and they're lovely. You can grow, you know, you can grow camellias and azaleas under them. I have pine trees in my yard. And that sometimes in the quest for the perfect lawn, people actually can do some injury to their residential pine trees and other trees as well. You've said there's been some research about maybe some of the herbicides people use.
Right. You know, we need to remember that from an insect's perspective, it doesn't really care where the tree is growing. It could be out in the middle of the forest, or it could be down, you know, shade lane or whatever it is, right? Yeah. And as we, you know, as our suburban areas branch out into more wooded spots, right? Everybody seems to want a place in the woods now. There's a lot of areas that are not commercial forests, but are perfect habitat for a lot of these pine bark beetles, you know, and if a southern pine beetle spot gets going near a neighborhood, it will simply go right through that neighborhood. And it's a lot different. You can't cut a big buffer with a logging crew through a neighborhood.
No.
In that case, everyone who's got trees in their yard or that homeowner association is going to be saddled with a bunch of costs to get those dead trees out of there. So, you know, one thing that we need to think about if we're having pine trees in our yard is just how are we taking care of those pine trees? We mentioned earlier, Ips and turpentine beetles come to trees that are stressed. So if it's a drought and you've got a pine tree in your yard, water it, right? Take care of it. Maybe fertilizer, give it a good, you know, little once a year, give it some mulch.
How would you water a tree?
How would you water? Well, you would want to, you know, I don't think you really need to water unless it gets into a drought situation. You know, okay. You don't need to have your sprinklers on to water the tree, but to water a big tree, you know, give it a couple hours of water, either with a sprinkler or if you're putting a hose down, try to move the hose around a little bit to around that tree. And then be careful and thinking about the types of chemicals that are going on your lawn. And you may do this, or you might have a lawn service that does this, but a lot of chemicals out there that are made to make a pristine, perfect, green, lush grass lawn may not be conducive to a tree that might be nearby, right? So I know there's, you know, in some cases, fertilizer that might go on a lawn, you know, may or may not be good for a tree. That just depends. There's some incidents in research in Florida. This wasn't with pine, but this was with hardwoods, live oaks in particular. They were having a bunch of live oaks start to die off, and they were all in these residential areas. And what they found was a chemical that was fairly commonly applied to lawns. It was sulfuron methyl, actually was toxic to hardwood trees. And so live oaks had their roots all through the bottom of the lawn, and the chemical was put on the lawn to keep the lawn nice. Well, then it got in those roots and went up to that tree on the side of the lawn too, even though it wasn't applied near the tree. So there can be cases, you know, and we just need to think that as tall as that tree is, especially a mature tree, it's got roots all over the place, right? Those roots are extending out quite a ways away from where that tree is. And they're able to soak up and take up anything that might be in that ground, whether it's, you know, good for the tree or not. So just being careful about what we put on there, being careful about how we treat that tree. One of the things we always see is what we call lawnmower blight. And that's when you're often a teenage kid is just hitting the bottom of that tree with a lawnmower, growing it, right? That's causing an open wound. That's a place where fungus can get in there. That's a place where, you know, it might start weakening that tree a little bit. And trees in urban landscapes in general are stressed. Right? The urban environment is the stressful one for a tree. So whether that's a pine or hardwood or whatever, it's just not getting the same amount of resources it would get if it was planted out in the wild, probably. So that's just something to keep in mind.
Okay. And I think as we see changes in our temperatures and water patterns, be there excessive amounts of water and then drought sometimes, we know that we want to keep our economy strong, see that those trees are strong, but also the value of trees providing shade and cooling in our residential areas is going to become more critical too, preventing urban heat islands and things like that. I want to thank you for being involved in environmental conservation. We feel like this is, you know, trees are critical to the health of our pocketbooks and also to the health of just where we are with our families and gardening and you know, and enjoying life when we can get outside. And now where we're particularly in our yards, I think we're paying even more attention to that. David, welcome. I think you've been here about 2 years now, a year or so?
Just about two, yep.
Yeah, we're so happy that you're part of the Extension family and will help us to keep this part of South Carolina healthy and green.
Thanks, Amanda.